Okay, so that is my answer. So thank you very much for your introduction. And also I would like to thank the organizers, especially Leon, for inviting me to give this our current activities on the very first talk. So I will talk about rather conventional materials, but I believe that they are still interesting in the conventional systems. So these are a list of my collaborators. So the left-hand side is theoretical colleagues, and right-hand side is experimental groups. So let me begin with a brief summary of the Berry phase, the idea and the consequence. So let Hamiltonian H depends on some parameter X. So X could be the set of parameters from X1 to Xn. So let's change this parameter X, change adiabatically, very slowly. So at each instant of time, you have some value of X. Then you can solve the eigenvalue problem, I mean the eigenstates and the eigenvalue of this Hamiltonian H of X. And then according to the time-dependent Schrödinger equations, the wave function psi t evolves. And let's take the loop in this parameter space. In this example, I took the x1 and x2, the two-dimensional place. Then the adiabatic change does not allow the states to transition between the different eigenstates during this adiabatic change. So this means the wave function is projected to the subspace of the Hilbert space for some specified n, which characterize the eigenstates. Okay, thank you. So this is a typical example of the constraint quantum systems. So that's why you have some problem of the curvature. So this is an example of the differential geometry. If your vector is confined within the surface of the sphere, then when you move your vector parallel transported along the loop, then the final vector is different from the initial one. So this deviation, this angle alpha, is given by the integral of the curvature enclosed by this loop. So the exactly the same things happens for the quantum mechanical wave function. Namely, the wave function at time t, t is the period of this circle loop, then the original wave function turns back into the something different with the phase factor. So this phase factor is the usual dynamical phase factor. That is accumulations of the dynamical phase. And the other is some geometrical phase called the Berry phase. And this Berry phase is given by the connection. Namely, if you take the wave function at x and slightly different x plus delta x, then you have this inner product, gradient x psi times psi. So this has a meaning of the connection in the parameter space. And because this is a contour integral around the closed loop, then if you use the Stokes theorem, so this An defined by this can be represented by the gauge flux, namely the magnetic field in the parameter space. So this is called a Berry curvature in the parameter space. Namely, the connection of the wave function in the parameter space matters when the adiabatic change of the Hamiltonian occurs, and then this leads to the Berry phase curvature. So another important point addressed by original paper by Berry is the following. So this gauge flux, namely the gauge field, Berry phase, is controlled by some singular point in the parameter space. Namely, if you have the degeneracy point of the two-wave function, then that corresponds to the magnetic monopole for the gauge field distribution. For example, if you have a double degenerate systems at this zero point, original point O, Then the very curvature is given by the solid angle, namely the gauge field created by the monopole, the center corresponding to the degeneracy. So once if you have this monopole, then according to Young-Wood's construction, you have to introduce at least two gauge choices to cover this whole surface. Namely, the north pole gauge becomes singular at the north pole, and the south pole gauge becomes singular at the south pole, corresponding to the Dirac string. Then you have to have a two patch structure. So that means in the presence of the magnetic monopole, the quantum phase of the wave function has a rather non-trivial topological structure. So this will become quite relevant in the Bloch wave in solids. So this transparency is just to remind you that we are dealing with wave dynamics in solid, namely the electron position and the momentum operate as a canonical conjugate to each other. And then the group velocity is the usual dr dt. But as I will show you, there is some additional contribution to the group velocity. So this is an explanation for these additional contributions. So now let me take this Bloch wave function. So the U is the periodic part of the Bloch wave function. Then now I take the parameter space as the momentum k. So corresponding very phase connection, namely the vector potential in momentum space, is given by the k derivative of the Bloch wave function like this. So now in the presence of this some connection or the non-trivial curvature, so my spatial coordinate xi should be replaced by the gauge covariant form. Namely, usually this xi is given by the derivative with respect to k, but because of this connection, I have to make it gauge covariant. So this is quite similar to the magnetic field case, but in that case, this xi should be the momentum p. So in that sense, this the dual form of the usual magnetic field problem. So in the presence of this gauge structure in momentum space, if you take the commutator between the x and y coordinates, then you end up with some very curvature, namely the magnetic field in momentum space. Namely, there is x and y non-commutative. So in the presence of this non-trivial gauge structure, so if you take the derivative of this coordinate x by dt, then if you have the commutator between the Hamiltonian, so this is the usual group velocity, and you have additional contribution coming from this commutator between x and y, and this leads to so-called anomalous velocity. And this V is a potential, and this is a force acting on the particles along the y direction. And the x direction velocity is given by the y direction force. That means this term gives rise to some Hall effect. So as I will show you, this is the origin of the anomalous Hall effect observed in many ferromagnets. So if you take into account this k-space very phase curvature, then the equation motion for the coordinate and momentum becomes very symmetric and dual to each other. As I told you, here is an analog of this magnetic field in moment real space. So these two are quite symmetric to each other. So this term plays a very important role in the following talk. So in the presence of this term, the symmetry between R space and K space becomes quite evident. So if you have that anomalous velocity, so I propose that there is a third topological current defined. Namely, in the usual ohmic current, you have a displacement of the electron distribution in momentum space due to this external electric field. But this one, electric field is balanced by the impurity scattering and inelastic scattering, etc. And you have a dissipation and heat due to heating. And the system is non-equilibrium. But there are another kind of currents in solids, namely the dissipationless current. So the representative one is a superconducting current, but you need a long-range coherence, namely the macroscopic coherence over the sample, and you need a magnetic external magnetic field. But in the third class, which I define as a topological current, you do not need any external magnetic field, and still the current is dissipationless, and the system remains in the equilibrium. So the current is driven by the very phase curvature in momentum space. Okay, so now let me show you the example of this anomalous velocity and anomalous current observed in real materials. So which I found is the most representative one is the anomalous Hall effect in ferromagnet. So this is a phenomenon where your transverse resistivity rho xy is given by the two contributions. So the one is the ordinary Hall effect, and the other is some additional anomalous term. So this M is spontaneous magnetization, and RS is defined as a anomalous Hall coefficient. So the previous, this has a very long history of research, and Karpas Ratinger was the first to address this phenomena in terms of the spin orbit coupling. And he did some perturbative expansion with respect to the spin orbit coupling, and he obtained the RS dependence of the resistivity squared. And later, there are many theories. Representative one is Kondos and Smith. So those people attribute the origin of the anomalous Hall effect to the some extrinsic mechanism, namely the impurity scattering is modified by the spin orbit coupling and spontaneous magnetization. So typically, this RS scale is fluctuation of the magnetization. And then this RS goes to zero in this Kondo formalism. So this is just reminds you that the spin orbit interaction is quite similar to the gauge field, because your spin orbit coupling is given by this form, and this is a typical A dot P form. So that's why this spin orbit coupling can be represented as a kind of a gauge field in real space. But the important thing is in the presence of the periodicity of the lattice, so there is no uniform magnetic field corresponding to this vector A field. Because of the periodicity, if you make a loop along the boundary of the unit cell, so this gauge flux is zero. So that's why you just have a non-uniform distribution of the magnetic field within a unit cell. That is the effect of this spin orbit coupling. Okay, this is more recent data from the anomalous Hall effect in the metallic ferromagnet. So this is a relatively good metal and shows the rather high transient temperature of 140 Kelvin. So this is a metallic ferromagnet. And the anomalous sigma xy scales like this. So this shows a quite non-monotonous and strange temperature dependence. So this does not fit with previous theories based on the extrinsic mechanism. So we did the very detailed first principle band structure with and without the spin orbit coupling. So this is a result for the density of state. As you can see, there is no, almost no change of the density of state. But the effect of the spin orbit coupling is crucial for the wave function itself, even though the density of state is almost unchanged. Namely, the sigma x contains all the informations coming from the wave function, namely the Berry curvature, in momentum space, then it is a quite a rapid fluctuating function of the film levels. So the reason why it's so fluctuating is due to the band crossing, which exists in the momentum space, and which is actually the magnetic monopole. So namely, if you have a band degeneracy point here, then the contribution of this electric state around this band degeneracy is given by the these expressions, which basically correspond to the solid angle measured from this band degeneracy point. And this is some particular example of the distribution of this momentum space magnetic field, namely the very phase curvature. Then it has a very sharp peak around the gamma point. In this example, the kz, the direction of the momentum, is fixed to be zero. So then you have a very sharp peak corresponding to the near degeneracy of the state which exists at this gamma point. So namely, this magnetic monopole exists in momentum space, and which can be detected by the behavior of the anomalous Hall conductivity. And this is a comparison between theory and experiments. So here we plot the sigma xy as a function of magnetization m. So the change of the magnetization gives you the change of the relative exchange splitting between the...
Can I just back up? I just
want to... Okay. Yes.
So what you're talking about are singularities arising at flat points in a single band? I think you said band crossings, but I...
Yes, actually this is a T2G system, so you have three bands, right?
Which are forced to be degenerate by symmetry at the gamma point.
Yeah, but in the presence of the magnetization and spin orbit coupling, so the degeneracy is lifted.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why this is not the real delta function of peak.
So it's a point of near degeneracy.
Yeah, near degeneracy, yes.
It seems like the theory would not be well suited to points of actual degeneracy. You're talking about adiabatic transport.
Okay.
Kind of
semi-classical equations you run would seem like they're missing in your tunneling. Okay. If once you have exactly the degeneracy point, you cannot use the adiabatic approximation for that particular point. But in reality, the film levels is usually far from this band crossing point. Then the contribution from the singularity cancels out. So that's why I think it's still okay. And another comment is that the formula given by this very phase curvature is exactly identical to the Kubo formula for the sigma xy. So this is some contribution to the Kubo formula coming from this near degeneracy point, so which is given by the solid angle. And now, as a function of these magnetizations, so the chemical potential for exchange splitting between the up and down spins changes, and then the sigma xy changes, and actually the structure, the band crossing point occurs several points. Then you have a rather strange non-monotonic behavior of the sigma xy as a function of magnetization m. So this is almost identical to the experimentally observed value. This triangle and this diamond correspond to the experimental result. And this curve corresponds to the first principle bound calculations. So these are almost identical to each other. So from this data, we conclude that the Hall conductivity, namely the Hall anomalous Hall current, is intrinsic in origin and coming from the very phase curvature in momentum space. So here I give you one comment. The old story by Kaplan's Latin jar, this is a perturbative expansion in spin orbit coupling. But what I clarified here is the effect of the spin orbit coupling is non-perturbative in nature. Namely, it introduces a non-trivial topological structure like a non-trivial Chern numbers into the band structure. Then, so that the monopole is basically determine the behavior of the sigma xy. So that's why you really need to take into account the spin orbit coupling non-perturbatively. So the similar agreement is obtained for the omega dependence of the sigma xy. And recently, there are another systems which the people attribute the anomalous Hall effect to the intrinsic origin, namely the very phase curvature, which is a magnetic semiconductor, manganese-doped gallium arsenide. And this is a calculation done by Alan McDonald's group, and also Leon Barron's group did some extensions to the hopping transport in terms of the random network models. And also, recently, Princeton group published another system showing the dissipationless feature of the anomalous Hall current in ferromagnetic materials. Okay, so up to now, I mainly focus on this spin orbit coupling. But the next issue is the same and similar effect can be obtained by the non-coplanar spin structure, namely the spin chirality in ferromagnetic materials. So the idea is going back to the old story by Anderson Hasegawa, namely the effective transfer integral between the two spins. You have to project the spins of the conduction electrons, then the effective hopping obtains the amplitude reduction and also some phase factors, which is related to the spin chirality. Namely, if you hop the conduction electron from 1 to 2 to 3 and 3 to 1, make a loop, then the sum of these phase factors accumulated is corresponding to 1/2 of the solid angle subtended by this triangle on the unit sphere. So this one has been discussed by Wen Wilczek Z at the early days of high TC superconductivity. But in that case, people talked about the fluctuating spin chirality. But now I will talk about the frozen spin chirality. Namely, the system has a definite magnetic ordering. Then still the pattern of this spin chirality is frozen in the samples. But again, the periodicity remains. Namely, the internal distribution of the fictitious magnetic field is always periodic and cancels to be zero if you integrate over the unit cell. So again, the problem is quite similar to the spin orbit coupling problem. So this is an example where we believe that spin chirality really plays a role to the anomalous Hall effect. Namely, the crystal structure is the pyrochlore structure, and this is a three-dimensional generalization of the Kagome lattice. This is a 1-1-1 projection of this pyrochlore structure. So the important message here is that if you take this projection, then there are two kinds of loops. So the one is this hexagon, and the other is this triangle. So that's why the unit cell contains two kinds of loops. One is this one, and the other is this. So that's why there are some inequivalence between this triangle and hexagon. So that is important to have a non-trivial contribution to the anomalous Hall effect. So this is a very strong single spin anisotropy towards the center of this tetrahedron. So then this neodymium spin acts like almost rising, pointing towards or outwards from the center. So these neodymium spins are coupled to the conducting molybdenum spins, which shows the ferromagnetic transitions at Curie temperature. So this is a plot of the neutron scattering Bragg intensity, and this is a 1-1-1 corresponding to the onset of the ferromagnetic moment, and this one corresponds to the onset of the neodymium spin ordering. So namely, the transverse component perpendicular to the molybdenum spins develops below some crossover temperature. So then, because of this neodymium spins are antiparallel to the molybdenum spins, so the total magnetization is reduced if you go to the lower temperature. So this is a low temperature neutron data obtained for these materials. Namely, the neodymium spins are tilted in a non-coplanar way, and because of the exchange coupling between the neodymium molybdenum spins, also this molybdenum spin is tilted a little bit, less than 10 degrees. So this small tilting gives rise to the spin chirality and the anomalous Hall effect. So this is a temperature and magnetic field dependence. And at the lowest temperature, so this low H, namely the Hall resistivity, increases towards the low temperature. And at the lowest temperature, this is a decreasing function of the magnetic field. So this is quite consistent with the spin chirality, because if you apply the magnetic field, so the tilting of the spins is decreased, and then spin chirality also decreases. So that's why. So this is a theoretical calculations for the sigma x-phi as a function of this tilting angle, and which is almost consistent with the neutron data and transport data, and also the anisotropy between the 100 direction and 111 direction is also reproduced correctly. So that's why we believe that this contribution is also coming from the Berry phase, driven by the spin chirality. So this is another evidence for the spin chirality mechanism. Namely, if you apply the magnetic field around the 111 direction, so then this 2-in-2-out structure turns into the 3-in-1-out structure. So if you calculate the spin chirality for this structure, so there occurs a sign change of the effective magnetic field, namely the spin chirality. So then accordingly, I expect and predicted that sign change of the sigma xy if you apply the strong enough magnetic field along the 111 direction, but which does not occur for the magnetic field along 100 direction. So this was a theoretical prediction. And later, so the experimental people really observed this behavior, namely the magnetic field along the 100 and 110 direction, just sigma x low h or sigma xy goes to zero because of this tilting is reduced. But on the other hand, this 111 direction shows the sign change and decreases again. And this should go to zero for the very high magnetic field. So this is another evidence for the spin chirality mechanism. So you can control the sign of the Berry phase and the spin chirality in terms of the external magnetic field. This, I think, is quite remarkable. And going beyond that, we also thought about the temperature dependence of the sigma xy and also sigma xx. So the important point here is the neodymium spin acts as a spin ice, because this is also the frustrated magnetic systems. So there occurs a huge spin ice fluctuation down to the low temperature, this neodymium spins. So this leads to the large low XX of the order of 10 to the minus 3 ohm inverse centimeter inverse, ohm centimeter, milli ohm centimeter, which is a rather large resistivity. But still, in the presence of a huge fluctuation of the spins and the ordered moment of the transverse component, namely the tilting of the spin is very small at the rather high temperature, but still the sigma x grows rather rapidly. This is because even though the spin fluctuates, the spin chirality does not fluctuate so much. So that's why these two are different degrees of freedom. So that's why we could explain the temperature dependence of the sigma xy or rho h in spite of the rather small black peak spot of the transverse component of the neodymium spins. Okay. Okay. We further extend to discuss the relationship between the. Let me skip. So for, then we are very seriously thought about the effect of the disorder and the elastic scattering, and we employ the Howden model to simulate this effect. And the main point is to start with the metallic ferromagnetic system to introduce the disorder in the two-dimensional system, whether we could find the quantized Hall effect or not. And our conclusion is that by using this finite size scaling, we could prove that the two-parameter Plushkin scaling still applies to this anomalous Hall systems, and eventually we obtain the integer quantum Hall system. When the H over, sigma xy is bigger than the one half of the E square over H. And this could be possible, if, for example, in the iron thin film. So this RH is large enough, go beyond this criterion. So the only thing we need is to go into the much lower temperature of the order of a millikelvin. But unfortunately, he stopped at a rather high temperature. So I asked the experimental people to cool down. So within the last 10 minutes, let me introduce the other subject, namely the extensions of this Berry phase curvature into the spintronics. Namely, in the presence of the time reversal symmetry, you have a Kramers doublet, and the band structure is doubly degenerate. So that leads to the generalizations of this Berry phase ideas to the non-abelian SU2 gauge field. So the idea is the following. Let's take the band structure of gallium arsenide. So this is basically the 6-4 degenerate, but in the presence of the spin orbit coupling, the 4-fold states and the 2-fold states are split. And if you focus on this 4-fold degenerate state, the Hamiltonian is given by this spin 3/2 Luttinger Hamiltonian given by this. And as you can easily imagine, that this degeneracy point at gamma point acts also as a magnetic monopole. But in the present case, it is a SU2 magnetic monopole. So this is a realization of the non-abelian gauge structure, this by Tony G a long time ago. And, but in the present case, the degeneracy is at the gamma point. And the non-abelian gauge structure of this gauge field acts as the equation motion for the doped holes. Namely, depending on the direction of the spins, so the anomalous velocity has a sign change. So that's why this set of equations, which is a generalized semi-classical equation motions, take into account the SU2 Berry phase curvature. So then, we can explicitly solve this equation motions by applying electric field. Then the whole, the side shift, side jump of this trajectory of the doped carrier depends on the direction of the spins. So this leads to the spin current perpendicular to the external electric field. So by counting the spin current induced by this external electric field, we end up with a spin Hall effect. So namely, if we apply the electric field for the p-type gallium arsenide system, so the spin current along the z direction polarized along the y direction of the spin is generated. So then this is our formula for the effect of the spin Hall conductance. So this is some explicit estimate. So which is reasonably large. And we proposed that this could be used to inject the spins into the semiconductors. So but now, further, we thought about some quantum correction to the semi-classical equation motions by defining the conserved spin, by projecting the spin operator into the lower light, lower Hall band and heavy Hall band, like this. And then this new definition of the spin current satisfies the Natas theorem, namely the continuity equations. And then we can estimate the Kubo formula. Then my sigma xy for the spin is given by the difference between the heavy Hall and light Hall. So this means the heavy Hall and light Hall has the opposite contribution to the spin Hall conductance. So that's why this cancels if you do not have a Hall doping. But now we invent some, we propose some insulating system where this spin Hall effect does not vanish even without the doping. Namely, in the zero-gap semiconductor systems like these materials, so the heavy Hall and light Hall band has the opposite dispersions. And even if the film level is at this zero energy, then the Hall conductance, spin Hall conductance, remains finite, but the non-universal. So the same thing happens for the narrow-gap semiconductor like lead telluride. So the same thing happens. So this Hamiltonian is given by the 4x4 Dirac Hamiltonian for each L point. Then you can estimate the spin Hall conductance in terms of this geometrical formula in the five-dimensional space. So then you have also the non-universal finite value of the sigma xy spin. So we believe that this is something non-trivial, even with a simple band structure, without any violation of the time reversal symmetry. So that means there is no spin accumulations because there is no channel for the dissipations, and because the system is gapped. And the question is how to detect this spin current induced in this insulating system. So the method we propose is the non-local transfer of the voltage through the spin current. Namely, if I apply the external electric field along this perpendicular direction, so the spin current is generated, circled along, then that voltage drop should be observed in the other end of the this ring, like this. So because of this spin current, so the voltage drop is transferred. So that is the experiment we are proposing to detect the spin current. And another question is, because this is rather similar to the quantum Hall system, might be the edge state appears for the finite open boundary systems. But we tried the calculation, but there is no edge state for the this spin Hall insulator. So maybe this could be, again, classified into some quantum order discussed by Xiao Gan, but still we don't know how to characterize this state. But actually, the similar spin Hall effect, something similar happens for the optical propagation, similar to the spin Hall effect, namely the Hall effect of light occurs. Actually, from the Maxwell equations, you can derive the semi-classical equation motion for the wave packet of light, including the state of the polarization represented by the spin of Z. So, for example, if you shed the light, then reflected and transmitted light is shifted perpendicular to this incident plane. So this this is a solution of the Maxwell equation numerically, and to see the shift, right? So this numerical simulation exactly agreement with the solution of this classical equation motion. So this effect could be enhanced considerably by forming some photonic crystal. So this is an analog of this spin orbit coupled band structure in solids. And you can actually try this structure, like a similar to the Halliday models, And then you expect a huge transverse shift of the trajectory of light. Another extension of this idea is to think about the superconductivity. So in the presence of this very phase curvature in momentum space, usually this is expanded, I mean the continuous distribution. But in the presence of the superconducting order parameter, this gauge strings will be shrink to the string singular point. Namely, the very phase curvature is confined in this space. So this Dirac string appears in the order parameter, and if that crosses the Fermi surface, then you have some non-trivial temperature dependence of the physical quantities. So namely, you have the vortex in momentum space of the order parameters. So let me summarize. So I hope I have convinced you that the quantum phase leads to the dispensationless current of the third kind, namely the anomalous Hall effect and the spin current and polarization current, which I didn't discuss. And this one is quite common and not so anomalous in that sense. So interplay between the center of mass motions and the internal degrees of freedom is quite important, namely the spin and orbital. And these are the manifestations of the relativistic quantum theory in solids, especially the spin-orbit interaction. And there are many open questions to this topological current in solids, including spin currents and heat currents, and also might be the orbital currents. So these we will study in the next 10 years. Thank you very much for
thank you.
Attention.
Hi, I guess I'd just like to also point out that we've recently done the whole of the Berry phase in light and have actually translated this model you call Haldane model actually to achieve edge states and non-zero churn numbers in photonic crystal.
I see.
Yeah, so we can have one-way flow of light along one-way waveguides basically.
It's maybe exactly the same model, right? Like this.
With a with Faraday effects, so you have the actual churn numbers there.
I see.
Which I guess this is a inversion symmetry breaking, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So we have, with a Faraday effect, you can now achieve edge states which propagate.
I see. Thank you very much.
So my question is about the relevance of the degeneracy point in anomalous Hall effect in general. So I guess if I look at the three-dimensional system, if the contribution is from the K-space monopole, then obviously the Hall effect is due to the gauge field of monopole at the Fermi surface. So the K equal to zero point is not that important. However, if I go to two dimension, say in Rajba model, and apply small magnetic field, I get gauge field due to skirmion field, then obviously the contribution actually is all from k equal to 0 point, right, shrink to 0.
Thank you very much for your comment.
So in that case, you know, how do we approach the degeneracy point is very important.
Yeah. Would you agree? Actually, there is a big difference between the two-dimensional case and three-dimensional case, as you pointed out. But what I want to say is that even for the three-dimensional case, if the Fermi levels crosses this degeneracy point, namely the magnetic monopole, there is some characteristic, rather rapid change of the sigma xy as a function of chemical potential. So that we call the fingerprint of this monopole in momentum space. That is actually observed in this real systems. But there is no singularity. There is no singularity. In the two-dimensional case, you have a jump, right? Like a plateau transition. But in the three-dimensional case, you do not have.
Yeah, I had a couple questions about this when you were talking about the spin chirality mechanism in neodymium, molybdenum 07, whatever it was. I mean, you seem to be drawing the analogy to double exchange, which, I mean, my understanding of that is that one's talking about systems where the conduction electrons are strongly Hund's rule coupled to some local moments.
Yes.
You need to be in a strong enough coupling limit that you're projected onto spin state parallel to the local moment.
Yes.
And here, it sounded like you were talking about electrons on different atoms than the... is one in that situation here? In this compound?
Okay, I understand.
This was designed for manganates where...
Okay, thank you very much. So my interpretation is the following. If you decouple this Coulombic interaction in the Strzelecki Hubbard transformation, then you have some Strzelecki Hubbard vector field at each site.
Mm.
So that could be this local spin SI, if you decouple this Coulombic interaction. In the at the mean field theory, then you have this local spin field coupled to these conduction electrons. So that is exactly the similar to this double exchange model.
Mm.
So that's why we, in the real system.
Is this material that the coupling there is strong enough to?
Yeah, strong enough. Because the system is half metallic.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, half metallic system.
Then the other question was, somehow I've always been confused by this, but there's no spin orbit in this description.
Yes.
Nevertheless, you get all effects. So how does that happen?
But implicitly, the spin orbit coupling plays a role for the single ion anisotropy. Right. So in that sense, spin orbit coupling is
true. Although,
but not
the conduction electrons.
Exactly.
You
do not need.
Not
you do not need. You do not need. So in that sense, this is some novel new mechanism.
I also had a couple of small questions. The first one is that if I understand it correctly, all the 100% of the anomalous Hall effect I should take as arising from this Berry-phase effect, the screw scattering side jump, they contribute nothing at all, they're just completely out of the picture, or they contribute small effects or what? I mean, what is the total story?
Okay. That's a very good question. And of course, I cannot exclude the possibility of this extrinsic contributions.
Right.
But I can offer you one explanation why this Berry phase stuff is dominating over this impurity scattering mechanism. Namely, the Berry phase curvature is very enhanced near this degeneracy point, right? So that's why the contribution from this magnetic monopole is dominant. Then it can be much, much larger than this extrinsic mechanism. I think that in the case of gallium arsenide case, I think that occurs because the magnetic monopole is at the gamma point and the doping concentration is very small. So we have some estimate for that.
I think I agree with that, but then at least we agree that generically it's possible that in some experiments, side jump and screw scattering will dominate. I mean, it's precisely just reversing the argument you gave.
Yeah.
But I agree that the materials you're looking at. My second question was on this work on mostly gallium arsenide holes, the dissipationless spin Hall effect, the published work. Now, if I understood you correctly in your talk, you are not really calling it dissipationless because that is not really dissipationless. You have an electric field, and maybe the spin part is not dissipation, but you need a battery. I mean, there is dissipation there, right? I mean, I'm not talking about the insulator. The new thing that you talked about is different.
Yeah, that's why we invented the real dissipationless spin current.
Now, I just wanted to make sure that we agree on terminology. You are very careful, so
why we invented this one.
And my last related question is that in gallium arsenide, as you know, the whole spin lifetime, T1, is very short. In fact, it's so short that it cannot be measured. It's sub picosecond, Wouldn't that have an effect on this thing? I mean, Shu-Cheng keeps on telling me it has no effect on it, and I do not quite understand that. Can you clarify that, please?
Okay, so I think you should distinguish between the lifetime for the current and lifetime for the spins.
Correct.
So the spin relaxation time is basically the time required for the electron distribution to come back to the equilibrium states. Mm-hmm. But this current is not driven by the shift of the distribution. Right. So it is flowing in this equilibrium distribution. So that's why this is free from such a relaxation.
And people, or maybe you have done calculation, including this in the vortex, and it all cancels.
Yeah, my colleagues have done this vortex correction, and he concluded that there is no corrections.
Because I did
for the Ratinger model.
Yeah, but I did see another paper claiming there is huge correction from
for the Ratinger model.
I guess it's Gerrit Bauer's work. I mean, I haven't followed it. I cannot.
Yeah, probably they are talking about this Rashba model.
Okay.
Okay, since we have a one-page comment, I think we could switch that, but that's the last question in the meantime.
Okay, thank you.
Just a quick comment. There was a paper by Xiaogang Wen and some French guy a long time ago that interpreted in this fixed spin background. The real part, the phase, of course, can be like gauge structure, but the real part somehow could be interpreted as propagation in curved space-time. Is that right? In curved space. As a metric structure. It's a paper by Wen and some French guy whose name I've forgotten.
Xiaowang.
He vanished.
He's been calculations.
The other thing is that it's not a bit in Berry space. Maybe I can just comment. There was a very nice experiment by Alex Pines at Berkeley that actually experimentally observed it in a nuclear quadrupole.
I see.
You know this experiment.
Yeah. Yeah, probably it is related. Yeah, your first comment is related to the metric tensor.
Right.
Yeah.
Xiaogang was able to write it in terms of metric.
I see. Yeah, I will catch him.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, hopefully it won't take up too much of your time. I'm John DeTusa from Louisiana State University, and I have some presentation of some data that I think will go towards showing how universal this effect might be. Although I don't have fractional quantum Hall effect in ion films or spin Hall effect, I thought you'd be interested. Here's a plot of a lot of different data from a lot of different systems where I plot sigma xy versus the magnetization, and the systems that I have, for example, the heavy fermion systems, which seem to lie off on the left-hand side at top in this hatched region. The itinerant magnets seem to, this is iron and nickel alloys, half-metallic magnets, and some magnetic semiconductors in here. And down here, there seems to be another area of behavior, which I would call carrier hopping systems, and includes manganates and some nickel and silicon films and things like that. See, here are the gallium arsenide and indium arsenide samples. And then this large amount of orange data in the middle is this iron, or the cobalt doped iron silicide. And the data that I show here for the cobalt doped iron silicide is a small gap insulator. You put cobalt in it, it becomes a magnetic metal, which is fully spin polarized. And you can see when I plot all of my data for a wide range of temperatures and fields, they all seem to scale on that same plot. Heavy fermion metals act differently because sigma xy is basically proportional to 1 over m cubed, and you can follow that through simply from the phenomenology of heavy fermions. But it seems like a lot large amount of data for all sorts of different systems follow this sigma xy proportional to m plot. So I think in answer to some of the questions, it does appear that at least in itinerant magnets with larger resistivities, this universal behavior seems to carry.
Thank you.